Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. It is Wednesday. Greg Bach is here. Jane Madner is on the board. And once again, because we are now at 54 days until the midterm elections, we are bringing you conversations and interviews with down ballot candidates from assembly districts and state senate districts. And today is no different. And so today, for the next half hour, we are joined by the 57th Assembly District Representative, Lee Snodgrass. Thanks for being here.
I'm so excited to join you guys from my kitchen.
From your kitchen. So this, you were elected in 2020, correct? And so you've are about to finish your first term. How did it go?
It was a whirlwind. I have to tell you, these two-year terms are really short, and I'm telling people at the doors, I'm like, I'm running for re-election, but I'm still getting lost in the Capitol. How did it go? It was drinking from a fire hose. We came in with one of the largest freshman classes in recent years, certainly. And I think the really unique thing about the class that I came in with, the 10 of us, is that we all came from organizing backgrounds. And so we came in understanding the power of building a coalition behind ideas that move into legislation and then taking that. So it was a really, really great, exciting time to be in the legislature. And it was also a terrible time to be in the legislature. It's never been more divided, as you guys have seen. A lot of what we did, I said it's a little bit akin to writing a paper, handing it to your teacher, and having your teacher toss it in the garbage, because that's how things operated this year. So most of the Democratic bills that were authored never even saw the light of day, never got a public hearing. So good and bad.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I commend anyone who ever wants to run, because it is not one, to campaign. It's not an easy thing to put yourself out there and be under the spotlight and have people attack you for things that you've said or not said. But then it's also to get into knowing that no matter what, you're going to be in the minority party, and what that feels like to show up to work every day, knowing that there's a chance that getting things done is going to be difficult. I know I would rip my hair out if I was in that situation. And so the motivation to run again, despite that frustration, what is it about the job and the way that you're showing up that you feel like, even though in that first term, so much of the paper that you wrote got thrown in the garbage, that makes you feel motivated to do it again?
Well, it's interesting because I talk to people about this, that I feel like a minority legislator has different responsibilities. One of them to me is to hold the Republicans accountable. They are passing a lot of bad legislation and introducing even worse legislation that would have incredibly harmful circumstances, I guess, for people in Wisconsin. So making sure that somebody is amplifying that to the community and saying, hey, you know, your representatives are trying to pass this, and this is how it's going to impact you and your family. The second thing, honestly, if you look at any public policy doesn't change until public opinion changes. And I think one of the biggest responsibilities, especially as legislators with an organizing background, is to build a coalition and to get public opinion to rally around issues, because eventually that is going to change policy. So I see myself as planting some seeds and building some momentum for things that may not happen long after I'm gone, 10 years from now. Government does not move fast. I'm sure that's a shocker to all of you guys. And then I guess really the third thing, not to sound too corny, but I really do think it is my responsibility to provide hope. And especially I'm in a district that's absolutely surrounded by Republican representatives. So I'm often the only woman who shows up at community meetings, and certainly the only Democrat. And so for me, providing an alternative vision of what Wisconsin can be, of what Wisconsin has been in the past, and providing that hope for the 51%+ of people who did vote for me, I think is really important.
And so as you are canvassing, because obviously this is a very different environment than when you were knocking doors, if you were knocking doors at all in 2020, because people were doing a lot more digital and calling because we were trying to not necessarily talk and be with the people who are outside of our little circle. How are the conversations different, or what are the conversations that you're having face to face now that this time around you can knock on doors?
Yeah, So it is really great to be knocking on doors. I did do a few doors in 2020, but I called it consent-based canvassing, where I would ask permission to speak to them, move back, ask permission to leave materials. It's much nicer now to be able to have, you know, lengthy conversations with people. Most people are concerned about, for me, the doors that I'm talking to, they're concerned about three different issues. One of them is inflation, the cost of living right now. So we're having conversations about the things that Democrats tried to pass and introduce this session that would have reduced household expenses and made this a much easier time for people. The second one is abortion. You know, even Republicans are self-identifying themselves to me as a lifelong Republican or a conservative Republican, and they're committing that they're going to be voting for me and for Governor Evers because of the issue of abortion.
Wow.
And then really, I think another thing that people talk to me a lot about is just the divide and how nothing seems to get done. And now that I'm one of those evil incumbents, you know, part of the establishment, as some people like to say, 18 months makes you part of the establishment, by the way. I talk to people about responsiveness because truly I am having conversations with just last week in Central Appleton, a man called himself a Trumper. And at the end of the conversation, he was voting for me. He was somebody who had no plans to vote for the top of the ticket that was Democratic, but he was going to vote for me because of responsiveness and because of hard work. And I think that's a really important thing for people to understand about state down ballot races and candidates who are have been in office in the state assembly, is that when you have to be responsive to your constituents, i.e., you have maps that are unfavorable. You know, some of my colleagues around me are protected by their maps. They don't have to be responsive. And I have lots of stories about that. My office answers emails. We answer phone calls. I actually call constituents. I follow up. We do the work that actually impacts sort of the main reason they're probably going to be calling their state representative. And people respect that.
And that's what I think is so interesting is we had Kristen Elfheim in here yesterday, who's running in your
area. Love her.
Yes, she is. She was very fun. But, you know, that was a big part of her message of actually listening to people. Because there was Wisconsin Reddit. The Wisconsin subreddit is sometimes just has some gems in there. And there was one state senator who is, this is his last year. He is not running again. You, as a legislature, had already hung it up for the year. And the response this person, he screenshotted the response he got back from this state senator's office of basically saying, well, this person's not running again, and so you'll have to take it up with the next person who gets this seat. And it was May. And the frustration of, oh, you can get a salary, and because you're not running again, you literally have zero accountability or responsibility to be responsive to your constituents. And so to kind of go off of that a little bit, that is a frustration I think you hear a lot, is every 2 years, the legislature basically hangs it up for the year in March. And so what have you been working on, knowing that there's not going to be as much work to be done in the Capitol? How do you focus your time? Obviously, some of it is campaigning, but you still have a job to do.
Yeah. Well, I think it's really, when people express to me, you know, the do nothing legislature or not working, I completely understand. Like, I mean, if I were a civilian, I would be really mad too. I think we had no business hanging it up in February, especially when we had hundreds of bills that had never received a hearing. I think we should campaign in the summer and the fall. You know, if I had my way, we'd be full on, you know, until late June, and the rest of it would be campaigning. But a couple of things here. So how am I going to represent my district, understand what my district's dealing with, whether it be local government issues, whether it be nonprofit organizations who are working to serve basic needs, whether it's just conversations with families? How am I going to know if I'm not a part of that community? So I spend a lot of my time meeting with community members, going to events, making sure that I'm showing up at, you know, town hall discussions. You know, if a city council has, you know, seeing something, an issue, making sure I understand that issue, making sure that I am talking to the people who actually make up this community, because that makes me a better legislator. That makes me be able to say, this is impacting my community, and I have specific examples of how it's impacting my community. That makes me more sensitive, that makes me more motivated, that makes me much better at my job if I actually know the people that I'm representing, right? I think another thing too that I make sure that I try to do is realize that, you know, first year, first term, first bills I had, that to me was like my rough drafts. I'm really excited to be taking a look at the legislation that I wrote and saying, how do I need to adapt this based on what has changed since I first introduced it? Or what is a persistent problem in me that I am seeing that we don't have a solution for? Or if we do have a solution, you know, maybe we need to tweak it a little. So already doing work, looking forward to next term and trying to find solutions for what's coming up. And then I think another thing too, and I talked about this at the door all the time, the bulk of this job, you guys, is not the hot button divisive issues that make headlines. The bulk of this job is really quite unsexy, I guess is the word I would use. Constituent services, answering people's phone calls, listening to them, answering emails, doing research and work to sort of help them get either the resources or connected to the people that could help them if you personally can't help them. That's kind of grudge work. And that is the work of the office. And what I think is really disappointing is that many of my colleagues on the other side of the aisle, they're not even aware of what their staff is doing. You know, my staff and I have regular conversations. She will update me on state licensing backlogs that we're working on, and we'll have little celebrations when somebody we've been working with has gotten their license. You know, she would have weekly updates with me at the height of the pandemic on our unemployment insurance cases. And then I would call those individuals and say, hey, just so you know, I know you're working with Vaughn, but I'm following this too, and we think we're going to have an answer for you in another week or two. So all of these things are part of the job. And it's sad to me that so many legislators check out because they don't have to engage with their constituents.
Do you have a question?
What I'm hearing is, like, because I worked in local government. I worked for the mayor of Racine years ago. And what you're saying is bringing back all these memories of people coming to us and saying, why aren't you getting these things done? I'm like, do you know how long it takes to put up a stop sign? So the issues that you want to get through, slam through, they're not going to happen. Like, you know, just that getting people acquainted with the process of making laws and just the slow race to it and the patience that you have. And what you're saying, I love it because you have this dedication to your constituents, not just to getting the votes, but to getting to them and telling them that you're
there. I probably have an unhealthy level of feeling of responsibility. I'm not exaggerating when I say sometimes I wake up in the middle of the night and I was like, oh, that's right, I got to call that woman. She needs to be connected with this person. Because I, you know, yeah. It's like, it's almost like productive anxiety, I guess.
That is a lot of responsibility to feel you're weighing, like taking it personally if things get done for the people that you're trying to help them get done with. I have that kind of anxiety. I wake up about the show, but that's a lot less consequential than actual people's lives who are you're trying to help get them their business up and running.
What's been really cool is that so many of these names, especially some of the state licensing issues where we've been able to, you know, help them get their license, whether it's like mental health provider or you know, radiologist. I've actually knocked two doors. You know, you look at the name and sometimes it doesn't ring a bell. And sometimes it's familiar, but you don't know why. And it's been people who I've helped and they're like, oh my God, it's really you. I'm so excited. You know, I was able to go to work and, you know, it's just so cool to be an incumbent. That's one really great distinction is when you're an incumbent, you actually can say, oh, let me take down this information and my office will get back to you and help you with this. I've done that lots of times too. And it's also cool because you can directly see ways that you have impacted or helped people. I think the hardest thing about losing a race when I ran before I ran for state Senate for Chris Alfheim's seat in 2018 is that I heard all these stories of need and I was like, I'm so excited to work on these solutions. And then I lost and I had no outlet for that. So when you win and then you're the incumbent and people tell you things at the doors that they need help with, I don't care if it's calling the United Way or calling, you know, the alder person, if that's who's appropriate. I love that I have the ability now and I'm in a position of power where I can actually be part of that solution.
Well, we're going to keep you through the break. We are joined this half hour by Lee Snodgrass, who's the representative of Wisconsin's 57th Assembly District. So stick with us through the break. This is As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
because of all the beautiful and new things I'm learning about you day by day.
Welcome back to Ask Us Wisconsin with Kristen Wright. Is that the first time you've heard us play that song, Greg?
Yeah, I think so. That was amazing. I feel like there should be little tweeting birds and...
Well, this is, you know, this is the part of the show where we get to know our legislature tours or candidates who are running. I also, at one point, maybe we'll change the name of the segment to, like, I can have a beer with him.
Ooh, then we can drink.
And then we can vote whether or not we'd want to have a beer with the candidate after they sign off. But this half hour, our guest has been and is Representative Lee Snodgrass, who represents the 57th Assembly District in the Fox Valley, in Appleton specifically. Greg, you said you had a question. Break.
One of the things I was going to ask before, and you spoke to it earlier, with regard to speaking to constituents who are, you know, committed Trumpers or conservatives, and you talk to them and you change their mind, at least I'm voting for you. How are you disseminating that message? Because I know that Beto O'Rourke is really doing a good job of putting that out to the world, that he's not just running in Texas. He's changing minds and getting people, I don't want to say on his side, but like to know that he's there for them. How are you putting that out to the world? Because I think that's very important. I think that's an important aspect, especially in state politics. I think it's easier on the local level because it's a little less partisan, a little less, just a little less. But in stateside, how are you putting out to the world that, hey, I'm trying to bridge this divide and I'm talking to people and getting their hearts with mine and we're moving forward together?
Well, first of all, I'm not arguing with them. I mean, I like Chris, when I go to the doors, I introduce myself as their incumbent representative and I say, just wanted to hear what's on your mind, what's troubling you. I'm here to listen. And I do. Then I do listen. And sometimes they just unload a whole lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. And really at that point I can tell, you know, there are certain issues and certain belief systems that people have that are just strongly held, and nothing I would say is going to change that. And I think we need to respect that there are just some things that people are dug in on. And so I don't dig in on those things. I will certainly try to correct, you know, obvious, you know, assumptions about, let's say, me or the Democratic Party, but I listen and I let them. And then I usually end with, if I know that I'm not going to be able to convince them to vote for, let's say, Governor Evers or Mandela, look, I almost call him Senator Barnes, Mandela Barnes, I will say, you know what? You sound really, really passionate in your respect for former President Trump or Senator Johnson. So I'm going to leave that be, but I'd love to talk to you about state legislative races and what I actually do and how I truly feel responsible for helping you. And then I just talk about it in those frank terms. Because, and I've said this before, when people call our office, we don't say, what's your party affiliation? Mm-hmm. We don't say, did you vote for me? Because those things don't matter. What we say is, how can I help you? I often don't know the party affiliation of the person that I'm talking to. In fact, more often than not, I do not know. And that's perfect and fine. I want to just know what their problem is and how we as a state representative, as a state office, can help them find a solution. And I think people ultimately respect that.
Well, I would hope that they respect it. And especially if you help them. Feel like they were helped and that they...
And you know what? There are people that I'm certain I've helped who will not vote for me.
Yeah.
And that's okay too. Yeah. That's Wisconsin politics.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I want to be sensitive how I frame this because I think as me personally, as someone who now talks 3 hours a day, I'm not even prior to this, I tweet things, I put TikToks out, you know, I am in the business of having opinions and putting them out to the public, for the public to have opinions on my opinion. And I know at some point, I've yet to have a opinion that I put out that came back to feel like, ooh, there was a lot of people.
That disrupted your entire life?
Yes! I know it'll probably happen eventually, because I don't think you talk 3 hours a day without at some point, that will probably happen to me, and I'll have to deal with it. So any advice when that does eventually happen, because earlier this year, you tweeted something out as far as when it came to education and being frustrated, I think, with the increasing helicopter parenting of parents doing, you know, how many more requests, and we've heard this from educators, how many more requests for open records requests, and being very involved and wanting certain books banned and all this stuff. And so you had a tweet that was then the object of a lot of hate and death threats. And
I'm grateful for it because I think it's
such a scary experience to have that much of the internet's vitriol pointed at you. And so what was that like?
Well, a couple things I want to say, first of all.
Okay.
The tweet, as I've started to refer to it, everybody knows the tweet. Clumsy, not contextualized, not fully formed. So we all say things that are not, you know, in the moment, that are not exactly what you mean. That was in response directly to a committee hearing where one of my colleagues on the education committee said, it's about time parents have their say, as they were talking about censorship in the classroom, as they were talking about telling teachers what they can teach, telling students what pronouns they can use, all of those things, which I personally don't think we should be doing. I don't think that the state, you know, representatives should be opening up school districts and teachers to lawsuits by policing what they're saying in the classrooms. That's what it was about. Do I think parents should have a say in their child's education? Of course. I did. I was a volunteer. I talked to my kids' teachers on a regular basis. I went to school board meetings. There's all sorts of ways that we can be involved. And I also want to remind people that educating your children does not end when the school bell ends. The best conversations I had with my kids were in the car, were at the kitchen table, and that is part of our job as parents too. If our kids are talking about something in a classroom that we as a family have a different opinion on, that's an opportunity for you to say, well, this is what your teacher told you today. Here's what our family thinks on that issue. And I don't want to hamper that in any way, shape, or form. Now, what happened after I tweeted was in my opinion, outsized. It was incredibly disrupting to my life, my family, my mental health and well-being, my safety, active death threats, investigated death threats, having to take precautions where I live to keep myself safe, businesses and organizations that I have lifted up on social media were attacked because of their association with me. There is no doubt that there is a very well-oiled machine that the other side has, and that they certainly weaponized my tweet as emblematic of something that they're trying to do to distract from the fact that they are chronically underfunding education and have been for a long time. So it was awful. I'm not going to lie. It was awful. And it's taken me a long time to come back from that. But I always remind myself that I said something clumsy and stupid, and I got all that vitriol. And yet I have a colleague who was under investigation and was recommended for charges on child abuse. And yet apparently that's fine. But I said something dumb on Twitter and I got called the B word and the C word, and you wouldn't even believe the things I got called. So it's been rough.
Well, I'm sorry that happened to you. Lessons to learn, but I wish we could keep you longer, but we have to let you go. Representative Lee Snodgrass, thank you for coming on today. We will link your website and more information on where people can find you on the blog post. But thank you so much, and good luck.
It's been a pleasure. It's fun. Sorry to miss the speed round. Thanks, you guys.
Bye now. Stay tuned. This is As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bray.